So you had mentioned to me about shows we could check out, shows of the past, because that's generally what we do. We just check out shows from various countries and various places and various decades. And you mentioned the Beachcombers. So I guess I'll just ask you first off, yeah, what do you remember? What are your memories of the Beachcombers, famous Canadian show, The Beachcombers?
I remember beautiful scenery. You want to talk about mountains, beautiful scenery. It's on the coast of British Columbia, but north. It's not like Vancouver or Victoria or any place like that. Bruno Geruzzi, famous Canadian, French Canadian type. He's almost like a Coeur d'Alene type of guy. I think he, I don't know if he, anyway, they do fishing and stuff, and it's like small town, small village, I would say village community stuff. Very, very popular Canadian show. I'm gonna say, I'm just gonna take a guess at this. The late 70s, early 80s, maybe? And just one of those, slice of life. What it would be like living in lumberjack world. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. That kind of stuff, that kind of feel about it. I never watched it regularly. I just saw it occasionally because I think I was going to university at the time. So maybe it was earlier than the late 70s. I'm pretty sure I was going to university when that was on, which is why I wouldn't have seen it regularly. But I did see it occasionally and I liked it. I liked it.
Yeah, and this is like kind of cheating on my end because I just, pulled up the Wikipedia page, so I got all the info. But before I did that today, I gotta say I frankly knew nothing about the Beachcombers. Like it's one of those names that I always knew, growing up, it was always on TV. But I had a sense when I was a kid, like I don't know that I ever watched an episode. I don't even know that I watched an episode to know if I would like it or not. I just had a sense that it was a grown-up show, like I just would see the Beachcombers and I would just kind of not be like, oh, I don't want to watch that because I didn't even know if I wanted to watch it. It would just cue me to then channel surf and I would just find something else. So I don't know that I ever saw the Beachcombers because it's this super famous show. But yeah, if you would ask me what it was about, I would say, I don't know, like guys who look for, people's lost pocket watches on the beach, I guess. What else would it be about? I had no idea. But I can give you the rundown, the good old Wikipedia rundown.
Sure.
The Beachcombers is a Canadian comedy drama television series ran on CBC from, this is where you could have picked any date and you would have been right, 1972 to 1990. So that is a long time, like 19 seasons. And with over 350 episodes, it's one of the longest running dramatic series ever made. But this is an interesting note for Canadian English language television. So they don't get into it, but that clearly insinuates that there's some French shows going on that we probably don't know about that ran for a million years. But as far as English speaking ones, yeah, that's an incredibly long run. That is crazy. And then they did various reunion specials and movies and stuff. And yeah, I'll get into more what it's about in a sec. But the other thing I noticed about this is, like we've had a pretty good, like, we've had a pretty easy time finding old shows in general. Like, especially American shows, it's great. Like, if you look up Gunsmoke, it's like, hey, here's not only Gunsmoke, here's every episode of the Gunsmoke radio serial. Hey, listen to that too. Why not? Just here you go. Like, American stuff is generally very easy to find. And then British stuff on the surface seems like it should be hard to find because they taped over a lot of old shows and we're always running into things where stuff is partially missing. But you can always find something. Like, it's still not that tricky to find most old British TV. I really kind of think that now that I think back to our various escapades of watching old shows, Canadian shows really are one of the toughest. Like, I was thinking of The King of Kensington. That's a pretty famous show. It's not even all that old. But, somebody sent me a message like, where did you even get that episode? That is like, there's so few episodes of that show. Like, that is one of these like almost lost shows. And The Beachcombers is not much different because if there wasn't this one guy on YouTube who uploaded these Beachcombers episodes that I found, we would not be watching The Beachcombers. I couldn't find it anywhere. And even this guy, it's just a smattering of random episodes. And somebody asked him, like, hey, have you got any more? And he said, like, these are all the ones I had. And even this is what's annoying. Even just the ones he uploaded, he said some of them have already been taken down from YouTube because of a copyright claim from CBC. So CBC is still paying attention to the Beachcombers enough to make sure no one can ever watch it again. But why haven't they posted it somewhere? Why isn't there a CBC archive? Or just put them on YouTube yourself, CBC. Like, nobody can watch this show. So I've just got some very random episodes because it's all I could find, and they are not good quality. Like, I think one of them is literally somebody videotaped their TV screen. Like, it's not even a VCR recording. It looks like someone taped the TV. But beggars can't be choosers, man. Like, Canadian TV is like, once it's gone, it is dust in the wind. It doesn't matter if you're the Beachcombers and you're crazy famous and you ran for 350 episodes. You're just gone. So anyway, I did find some, luckily, but it was tough, man. So that's the state of how well we're looking after our cultural heritage in Canada.
Yeah, isn't that odd that they wouldn't post them somewhere? Or unless the plan is, if they get really tight for viewing stuff, they'll just bring them out and run them. But probably not. Probably they won't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's kind of like that in England also. Like, there will be stuff, like, you can check on the BBC Player website and it'll tell you the last time something aired. And it might be a long time ago, like this played on Christmas 2004 or something. But I've heard stories from people who worked at the BBC who have access to, like, the BBC archives. Like, the BBC has all the stuff. And if you work there, you can log in and you can watch it. But yeah, they only release it occasionally and they're kind of careful with how they distribute it. But if that's going on in Canada, I mean, who knows about it? It must be, because again, like, they're paying enough attention that they copyright claimed these things on YouTube. Somebody went through the YouTube system and, you know, made sure YouTube is aware CBC owns the Beachcombers. Like, they're participating enough just to get in everyone's way, but they're not making these shows available. It's just the worst of all worlds. So anyway, that's where we're at with the Beachcombers. But let me give you the quick, also though, this kind of cracked me up. So again, I didn't know what the Beachcombers was about. You know, again, I just thought maybe it was, I don't know, just some layabouts about town, or I don't know, living on the shore, living in a beach hut or something. And maybe just to make a little pocket money, they comb the beach. I was wrong. That's not what it's about. So Beachcombers follows the life of Nick Adonidas, who's a Greek Canadian. So I think that's where you thought he was French, but he's apparently actually Greek Canadian. A Greek Canadian log salvager in British Columbia who earns a living traveling the coastline northwest of Vancouver with his partner Jesse Jim aboard their logging tug Persephone, tracking down logs that broke away from barges and logging booms. So yeah, again, just very Canadian sounding, right?
Okay, now Jesse Jim, let me see if I can get him right. Jesse Jim, I think, is a native kid who works for, Jersey. I think that's who he is.
That is, it appears, correct. He was a First Nations actor from Canada, passed away in 2022. Rest in peace, Pat John is his name. But yeah, not only is searching down stray logs from logging stuff, just an incredibly Canadian setup. But then their chief business competitor is named Relic, a somewhat unsavory person who will occasionally go to great lengths to steal business and logs from Nick. So, I mean, even that sounds Canadian, right? They're like, yeah, he's not so bad. Sometimes he messes with with Nick and Jesse, but, you know, not always. I just thought that was funny because that sounds very Canadian. And then the series also focuses on a supporting cast of characters in Nick's hometown of Gibsons, BC, often centering on a cafe called Molly's Reach.
Okay. I vaguely remember all of those characters, but just vaguely.
So what I've got is, I basically went with, it's quite a wide spread of what we've got here, which is nice. At least if we're just going to get a couple random episodes, at least we get to see from various eras. So the earliest one I could find is Season 4, Episode 3. And again, these are just on YouTube if you search, at least crossing fingers that they are, unless CBC has taken them down since we recorded this. But as of now, they're there. So Season 4, Episode 3. And then we're going to jump way ahead. I got the episode that has the most views on the guy's page. And it's Season 16, Episode 10. So we're going to jump way long in between the two. And I think that could be kind of interesting. Oh, I've got the names, I suppose. So Season 4, Episode 3, Invisible Relic. And Season 16, Episode 10, A Light Touch. So yeah, that's always interesting with a long-running show, just to see how things have changed in all those years. And then, yeah, apparently it's one of these cases, too, where when it got canceled, it was still popular in Canada. It was not, you know, it could have kept going, but just, you know, every show's got to end someday. So this kind of seemed like it ended for no particularly good reason. They just stopped making it.
Okay, well, let's see if it holds up, if it is as valuable as or as interesting and good as Canadian TV seems to think it is.
So yeah, it's always a little weird going back to a show when you haven't seen it in many, many years. Of course, I have never seen this show at all, so it was the first time for me. But how did The Beachcombers strike you after this extended break?
Well, it was okay, but as I said, originally when it was out, I didn't see very many of them, just occasionally, and I don't know that I'd go out of my way to check out more versions of them. Now, we will watch the next one, but, and you know, now that I'm thinking back to it, I'm wondering, like, why didn't I see so many of them? And I know why. I was at university when those were going on. They were on at 7 o'clock. And see, when I would go home to visit, there'd be very few shows on TV. And 7 o'clock on Sunday night, The Beachcombers would be on because what else was there to watch? We only had CTV and CBC. And I don't even know if we had CTV in those days. Yes, we did. There must have been something on CTV that just wasn't better. I don't know that I would have gone out of my way to make this a regular viewing.
Yeah, I'll be kind of curious to see the other episodes. So this one was from 1975, so I probably never came across this even in reruns because I was born in 79. But we're going to watch one from 88, so that'll be around the time when I would have been bumping into this show on TV. And I'll be curious to see if it kind of evolves or whatever, or maybe I'm going to say matures, because I'm surprised how silly that was. So the whole idea is they want to, I got to admit, the character of Relic, he's better in real life than he sounds on paper, because as soon as you see him, you do kind of get that vibe of like, oh, this does feel Canadian. I do know people like that, where it's like, they're kind of a pain in your ass, you know, they kind of suck, but you know, they're your friends. They just live in the neighborhood. What are you supposed to do? You just kind of put up with these people. So I'm like, oh, okay, I do kind of like that character. That makes sense. But yeah, they come up with this whole elaborate scheme of just pretending that he has died, or that he's like, you know, in between worlds. He's a ghost that needs to be exorcised because they want to, you know, kind of, he's broken some rules, some social mores. They're like, ah, we're going to show him. And it's just so silly that, like you were saying as we watched it, like in real life, this would break down immediately. As soon as he touches you physically, it just shakes someone on the shoulder and says, hey, what are you guys doing? It's over. But they managed to keep this going all day. And I mean, I'm glad it doesn't have a laugh track, but it does still have that spoopy music, you know, to let you know, like, it's a little silly now. Boop, 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 boop. So I really don't quite know where this show falls. Like, I see why I didn't watch it as a kid, because it has that vibe of like, oh, this is a show for the adults. But if this is a show for the adults are a little slow. You know, like who is this show for?
And things like the RCMP officer, the constable that is stationed at Gibson, Molly's Reach, whatever the community is, for him to be involved in such a silly thing, he even says at one point when the young fella says to him, like, couldn't we have taken the police boat out? Oh, no, I couldn't have taken the police boat out. I would have had to answer to them. Well, I think you'd have to answer to the fact that you're bringing in this presumed corpse on the trolley that, you know, because you presumably have just extricated this guy from the sea, and you're going right along with that and playing all those games. I would think that if Mr. Relic decided to put in a complaint to the RCMP, that guy would have been shipped out of there pretty freaking fast. You know, I'm sure there's a certain standard that RCMP officers have to rise to, and they just can't go around doing these little kind of games, playing these games with the civilians and getting away with it. So yeah, the little things like that are like, okay, I guess I got to suspend belief quite a bit in a story like this.
Yeah, it's maybe a weird comparison, but I think just the small town and the central location being a coffee shop sort of made me think of Gilmore Girls. But it's sort of similarly whimsical also. But yeah, like you're saying, like there's legitimate kind of like laws possibly being broken here, which is like, I don't know. It's just so strange. Like I can't put my finger on it. But on the other hand, it's easy to criticize this show of like it's not for kids, but it doesn't really seem like it's for adults. It's kind of silly and whimsical, but it's also law-breaking and weird. But on the other hand, it ran for 19 seasons. So what the hell do I know, man? I mean, obviously, the Canadian public knew what they wanted, and this was it. But again, that's where I'll be interested to see how, once we get to season 16, I'm going to assume it's kind of shaped up. Like, this is very early still. So surely it'll be, I'm going to say, less silly by 1988. But I mean, I guess we'll see.
And I think some of its popularity, especially with Canadians, may have been the local color. The scenery is beautiful in it. The mountains and the wild sea and the roughness of, you know, being the logs and the small town community, sense of community. The fact that the people, and this is very, very common in TV, Canadian TV, nobody is beautiful in it. There's nobody with the fabulous makeup or the gorgeous body or whatever. They're just standard, everyday, normal looking people, the kind of people that if you went into a coffee shop anywhere, that's what you'd see. Even it's not even like immaculate. As I said, like there's the bottle of HP sauce sitting there looking right at you. And that's what you'd see if you went to sit at a counter in some of these small places. You'd see, yeah, the ketchup and the HP sauce and the pie is on the back shelf and the coffee is just right there too. And very Canadian, very comfortable, I think is. And I think that, yeah, people in Canada would like that local color, that Canadian feel.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties into why also like the just the greasy haired kid with the mullet that they had to pull him, like, hey, come with me, we got to go do a thing. How I said that reminded me of Corey and Trevor from Trailer Park Boys, because Corey and Trevor, like the way they got on that show, it's the other coast, you know, the East Coast, but you know, Canada's kind of the same all around. And they weren't actors, you know, they were working on the show and they just started putting them on the show. And then eventually they quit the show because they weren't really getting paid much extra. And every plot line was just them getting shit on. But that feeling of just like some guy who's like 21, who just is taking a job or whatever, feels exactly like that kid in the Beachcombers. Because again, he just doesn't look like an actor, doesn't look, yeah, like he's not a character they chose. He's just some guy that probably lived near there who had a greasy mullet, you know? So yeah, it has that feeling for sure. And like, that's the part about it I definitely like the best. It would like be better if it didn't have a plot. I don't know what it would be about, but the plot was getting in the way of just, yeah, soaking in the vibes.
Okay.
So before we watch the second episode, what I also wanted to bring up for Canadian nostalgia is as soon as I started reading about it being, you know, log adjacent or log driving adjacent, the first thing that came to mind to me is the log driver's waltz. Does that mean anything to you?
Kate and Anna McGarrigle, their version of it, right? The log driver's waltz. Log driver's waltz goes.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. Because, yeah, what I'm thinking of.
I know the log driver's waltz.
There is a cartoon, a little Canada vignette of the log driver's waltz that I didn't know this, but when I was looking it up today, it was made in 1979. So it makes sense that I saw this thing a million times. It was born the same time as me. I must have seen this thing 200 times. It's just one of these things they would just put on at random times on CBC between random shows. We got 3 minutes to kill. Let's just put on the log driver's waltz. So it's one of those weird things where I can't say I'm especially fond of it, but it's going to be stuck in my brain for the rest of my life. You know, there's nothing I can do about it. So I just thought, because again, I haven't seen it in 20 years, probably. Maybe it's still on CBC to this day. Who the heck knows? But yeah, just the talk of log drivers just made me want to watch the log driver's waltz again. So for our intermission, let's watch the log driver's waltz.
log driver's waltz. And see, that's the thing too. The log driving is almost extinct in our part of the world, in Eastern Canada. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but trucks and everything else now are moving the logs as opposed to rivers. But I remember as a kid, the river, St. John River, being just absolutely full from side to side with logs. And the Nashwauk River, where we lived, the logs just flying down the river. It was quite a spectacular time. And it's something you very rarely see nowadays.
Yeah, I guess I should explain briefly. I mean, I just take it for granted because it's such a Canadian thing. But I mean, by the time I was up and about in the world, it definitely was, they weren't doing it in Fredericton anymore. I never saw actual log driving, but I was very aware of it because of stuff like this, this little song. And it is one of those weird things where I guess if you want to transport logs, I mean, yeah, just use the water. Why not? But it's one of those like jobs that is deceptively dangerous and hard, you know, like if the logs get caught, they'll just keep getting caught until the whole river is blocked up by logs and you'll just kind of create a dam. So these log drivers, these guys would like literally walk on the logs and they'd have to spot where the logs were getting jammed up and go unjam them. Or if it was a real bad situation, like literally use dynamite to blow up the part that was a problem. And they would die pretty often from falling down between these rolling logs and getting crushed. Just a scary, weird job that probably for the best that it doesn't exist anymore. And yeah, to commemorate it, there's this song that has a little cartoon that played on TV literally every day, probably many times in Canada.
And if this is what I'm thinking of, this is by famous sister singers, Kate and Anna McGarrigle.
Luckily, this was on YouTube. This is easy to find on YouTube. Canada's actually taken care of the log driver's waltz.
Look at that, running on those logs. Holy. Isn't that sweet? What a cute cartoon.
It's just, I don't know, I find it so weird because it was drilled into my head so hard for so many years that it's weird to look at it now as an adult. And, you know, I'd say relatively, like, proud's the wrong word. That whole thing of, like, I'm proud to be an American. Like, I feel like Canadians don't feel that way, but we're not opposed to Canada. We're like, yeah, Canada seems pretty good. But I'm like, so this is what they wanted to drill into my brain as my Canadian identity is there's a moose and there's logs and there's a... beavers in there and there's like, I guess so. Guy with a plaid shirt.
I don't think I've ever seen that cartoon version of this. Now I know that song well, and they play it on CBC on Saturday mornings like a lot, and these girls, like, they have the swimming song, and there's, I don't know if you know the swimming song, but the girl learning to swim.
No, they never made a cartoon of that one, so I don't know that one.
But this one, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that cartoon, but I think it's really cute. And it really matches that song.
I guess that's how, yeah, they want to hit all the generations. They got me with the cartoon. They got you with the radio. You know, just want to make sure everybody knows it. That's our unofficial national anthem. But anyway, yeah, that seemed appropriate, even though I got to assume the Beachcombers probably doesn't often really focus that heavily on getting runaway logs. And even when they do, it's obviously not log driver style, but you know, good excuse to just bring up the log driver's waltz. There's some Canadiana for us.
That's a little different too. In the Beachcombers, they're pulling their logs into the ocean, so that you wouldn't have a contained space like you would with river logging, where you've got two sides and everything is kind of pinned between those two sides of the river. Out there, yeah, they just have to, you couldn't drive the logs the same way in the ocean, I don't think, that as you can in a river.
Yeah, and stuff like that, it certainly does make you appreciate the people of the recent past, you know, that got us where we are, especially in North America. It's very easy to see because we're a new, relatively new nation. You know, it's very easy to envision those people of the past and doing the log driving and building all the stuff that we've got. And but even I feel that way even in other places. Like, I just recently walked up the tallest mountain in Taipei, that's like 1,100 meters, and there's stone steps the whole way, the whole blessed way. I mean, you start at about, where does it start? 400 meters or 600 meters? But anyway, there's like a good half kilometer of these steps that somebody in the past had to make these things. And you're just like, wow, like, thank you, people of the past, because now I get to use it and it's great. And yeah, that's definitely a log driver or lumberjacks, just anything, just anybody who even came to North America at all and just survived this horrifying climate. Like, cheers to all you folk, because we got it a lot easier now, thanks to all that. So I didn't have to get crushed between some logs. You know, I didn't have to do that.
Well, first you had to drag them out of the woods, which they did with horses. Then lumber camps were quite famous throughout all of Canada, I think, Northern Canada, Eastern Canada. And log guys would go there in the fall to start the cut. And they'd live in these log camps or lumber camps for the entire winter while they would be harvesting the logs. Then you had to get the logs out of there, which they did with usually horse teams that would drag the logs to the river. And then you dump them in the river. And then they had to be held back in a great big boom, which like a great big, like a barricade that would be put around the logs. And then when the river got high, usually with the spring flood, they'd open up the booms and the logs would go tearing down the river to a mill somewhere. And then they'd have to be dragged out and taken off to the mill, probably again by horse, of course by horse. Well, now they've got these big machineries that go into the woods and they just clear cut and the logs just come out probably in a day or a couple of days and loaded onto trucks and off they go to the mills. So it's quite a different lifestyle than what it would have been, you know, let's say even 50 years ago.
Yeah, there's so many little details you don't think about, like even the little bit that I read about it today. Like they were saying one of the dangers of a log jam is that if it does build up too much, if the logs get pushed too far ashore, they just have to leave them because you can't realistically get the log back in the water because it's a whole great big giant tree, you know? And yeah, it's just like you just kind of take stuff for granted of like, I don't know, roll it back into the water, but you just can't. It's just gone. And it's like, yeah, like all that stuff. I mean, that's why you have to use the river in the first place, because how else do you move these damn things? So yeah, it's all pretty crazy. Or like you were saying, I mean, I guess you move them with horses and stuff, but yeah, you can get them to the river, but you're not going to get them across the province that way, you know?
And even when you're dragging them with horses, once they, okay, let's say they come back up on shore, it's springtime. The water, they probably came up on shore too because there was flooding. The floodwaters brought up a whole lot of them, just left them, spread all over the place. Well, how do you, and then you've got to wait for the water to go down and then let the logs go down. Well, how do you get those ones? It's one thing to drag them out from the middle of the woods with a working team, a horse, and loading them up on whatever you loaded them on. But individual logs that were by the shore caught up in trees and things that would be all along the shoreline, I don't know that you could get a horse in there to drag them out.
Yeah, or if it was muddy and stuff.
Yeah, and springtime, yeah, it would be muddy until, well, probably June. And then you'd get greenery starting to grow, and yeah, you'd get all this stuff caught up in other vegetation that's along the shore. Well, unless you, yeah, how do you get your team in there in muck and swamp and all this stuff that would be on the sides of the river to get your logs out? No, you probably would have to leave them. I never thought about that, but yeah, that's probably what would happen.
All right, so now let's check out, jumping way ahead, Beachcombers, season 16, episode 10, A Light Touch.
Yeah, let's see if she holds up.
All right, it's gotten kind of late on my end with all of this log drivers waltzing and beachcombering that we've been doing, so I got to switch to quiet mode. But yeah, that is, I'd say, pretty different. Definitely feels different from the early one.
Well, it has a lot more money thrown at it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was almost, I don't know, it's just almost weird. There's like a, I guess it didn't feel so different until the bank robbery. And I was like, what? And then, yeah, it became very much like a, like more of a drama, almost like a soap opera.
Yeah, we had the love interest and, look at the scene even at the end. Great aerial shots. That local feel that the early shows have are gone.
Yeah, I guess just, I don't know. I guess that's all. I don't really know what to say about it. I just find weird about it. It's just that it ran for so incredibly long, you know? I mean, it didn't seem like the worst show at the beginning. And by this point, it's definitely shaped up into more of a conventional show. But 19 years, it's just a really long time. That's the part that I don't quite get, you know?
Yeah, it's become very much like TV dramas of the 1980s. It's very... There's nothing really unique about it that stands out, whereas in the earlier show, you definitely had the feel of a village or a small community in northern Canada or northern British Columbia. It seems to have lost that feel now. It's almost like American become Americanized more.
Yeah, well, sort of in the sense, I guess, of, romance drama and bank robberies and stuff, but it's definitely still Canadian because, yeah, you were pointing out as we watched it, just, oh, there's that little Canadian thing and this little Canadian thing. So,
oh yeah, the Bank of Montreal, the Shell station. It's still very, it's obviously still filmed on location, but they've expanded the location now from the port and the restaurant to, my God, they had all kinds of scenes here. They had street scenes, they had aerial scenes, they had the bank, the restaurant has been upgraded, very modernized, and there's somebody at my door.
You know what? I think that's a good time maybe to just wrap it up. I mean, I don't know how much there is to say about the Beachcombers anyway, so there we go.
It's getting late, so if you need to shut down, otherwise I'll check in with you in a couple of minutes.
So yeah, we did our job. We revisited the Beachcombers, but in true Canadian fashion, somebody has just rolled through the door on Barb's end, so... Yeah, we'll call it to a close there.